The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 528, recorded on February 13th, 2019.
Welcome to the 528th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 361st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right. So we did record something last week, but my computer was acting up and I couldn't upload it. So we're going to try again this week with all new news. The old episode will probably be archived and become some, well, we needed an episode for this week, so but we couldn't do it, so here's a rerun of something we never aired.
Alrighty.
So anyways, what have you been playing, TJ?
I've been going pretty full throttle on Apex Legends.
Yep.
So
actually, we discussed this last week, and one of the funny things is that there was absolutely no hype for Apex Legends. None. And it's odd because one influencer did talk about playing it back in October, but no one paid him any mind. It's sort of like a couple of days before it was released. And, you know, it's one of those rumors that it's like it's leaked by PR, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not a real leak. It's actually just something that's and then it hit with a thunder blast last week on Monday, and everybody was talking about it.
Yeah, and like it's had a hell of a week too. Like in 3 days, it was over 1 million. In 1 week, it was over 10 million players. It's been on top of Twitch ahead of Fortnite and League of Legends. It's absurd how well it's been doing.
25 million.
I heard 10 million last count, but that might be a new number.
So anyway, this is basically, what is it, a class-based battle royale?
Yeah. You have to be on a squad of three, and you pick a character. All of them have different abilities. They're built like Overwatch characters in that, like, each of them has, like, one regular ability, a passive ability, and then an ultimate. And you just go at it. You just pick an area, land on the map, and go at all the other squads until either you die or you win. And it's really been fun, like, really stretching what the characters can do. Like, there's plenty in the there's plenty of weapons, and there's plenty of places to go, and there's plenty of strategy to it. But it's also, like, playing with the character synergies and figuring out how they work best has been a really good time.
Well, let's first discuss who the developer is.
Yeah, it's Respawn Entertainment, who right. Also handled Titanfall.
And here's the thing. They also handle – they used to be Infinity Ward, and they used to handle Call of Duty when it was really good. You know, and they were the ones who revolutionized online with Call of Duty Modern Warfare or Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. Yeah. You know, they were the ones who started the you get experience points for almost everything that you do sort of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so and then they created Titanfall, which successfully integrated wall running and jumping and mechs into a game, you know, putting parkour in a shooter and making it really fun. So we're talking about people with a really good pedigree of multiplayer. Also a single player, but their multiplayer has always been, you know, trendsetting.
Yeah.
And I get the impression, you know, they saw Fortnite and they saw PUBG and they said, hold my beer. Hold my beer. I'm going to show you how it's really done. You know, it's like we're going to school you guys really make this.
Yeah. And the silly thing is that, like,
hello. What?
Are you still there, Jonah? You were breaking up just a little bit.
Yeah. What was the last thing you heard me say?
They basically said hold. Respawn said hold my beer and did it better.
Yeah, I mean, and also the class-based shooter as well, like Overwatch and stuff like that. So you were, you know, continue what you said after I cut off.
Yeah, and the silly thing is that, like, Call of Duty tried this with Blackout, but the thing that Call of Duty didn't do was go free-to-play. And I think that's the all the difference, is that Apex Legends came out of the gate free-to-play, and you can spend on cosmetic items just like you can do in Overwatch or Fortnite, but really, like, there's no barrier to entry. You get a couple of the characters are locked behind grind or paywalls, but they don't, like, they're not overpowered enough to tilt the system. And that's really kind of, it makes it accessible to everybody.
Yeah. You want to talk about the funny controversy? Well, funny, you know, funny as in how pathetic. When one player complained that Gibraltar was gay, that I don't want to play to gay character. I love this character, and now you've ruined it by saying he was gay.
It's really,
Blazinski really leapt in on that one and said, you know what they should do? They should have him running around with a rainbow cone behind him and having a fairy wand and all that stuff just to rub it in.
Yeah, it's really funny how far those people are stretching to be mad about the game. Because the other thing that I heard besides Gibraltar is gay is that you got women of color and as primary positions, and you've got a non-binary character. You've got they referred to Mirage as some minority man, which I don't know how you can get that out of looking at him, but whatever. And then the one white guy is Caustic, who happens to be, like, another word for toxic. So people have been bending over backwards to be mad about, like, all the representation in this game.
And the effect it's had on the game is none, nothing, nil. People playing it. Because here's the thing. When a game is fun, no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
That's true enough.
Yeah. And it is good. It has legs. Like, it's exactly, I've said it before and I'll say it again, it's what I got, it gives me the same vibes I got out of playing Rainbow Six Siege on day one, except it's more technically proficient.
Did you see the video I sent, the trailer for the new Australian Warriors for that?
I have not seen it yet.
Okay, they had it. It's a comedic little trailer. It's only a minute long. It's pretty funny. And they're a lot kookier than the other operators are. Nice. Now, the other thing that was last week, which we actually discussed in news, but we might as well rehash it briefly. First, it said by the publisher, well, there's not going to be any Titanfall 3. And then Vince Zampella, who heads Respawn, said, oh, get ready for more Titanfall later this year. So they're sending mixed messages.
Yeah, I think I do believe that this was like a side stop for them that probably put an actual Titanfall 3 further down the line. But I mean, like, Titanfall 3 is happening. It's just not going
to
be.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, I think this game is probably the biggest advertisement you could ever do for Titanfall.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what's missing in this game? What's missing are pilots and mechs. Yes. And one of the things that made Titanfall really fun was Titans and mechs, especially since when I played Titanfall, I actually preferred being a pilot than being inside my mech because it was so fun just to take down mechs when you were a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't impossible either, you know. It's about rodeoing a Titan and say, oh, guess what? You're in your big bad robot? Well, not anymore.
And this is the kind of game where, like, the map is big enough that could possibly happen down the line, like adding Titans to the game. I could see them doing it. It's just a matter of when they do it. And how do you balance that too? That's the other toughie.
The one complaint which I will give people about Apex is that it is a little unbalanced. But on the other hand, you know, it's hard to balance a game with so many diverse classes. I mean, it takes a lot of testing. even if you've been testing them, you know, internally, you need to put it out in the wild to really get the real testing.
Uh-huh.
And you know what, you know, the next patch people are going to be complaining about nerfing and buffing. But it's always the complaints about these games. Oh no, you nerfed my favorite character.
Yeah. And I mean, like, there are certain things that need to be nerfed. Right now, Bangalore is like the main soldier. She has a artillery barrage attack. That thing can do some tremendous damage in a quick succession. Whereas, like, Caustic, I like playing that character, but, like, his stuff just isn't that powerful. Like, I would love to be a defensive player and lay some traps and see what happens, but it's just a little too tricky to play him feasibly right now.
Yeah.
But the game is great. The game is great, and it's very early, and we've got plenty of time to see what they do with this, and I'm excited for the future of what it does.
Well, Respawn knows what they're doing, and here's the thing: not in the news, but EA was talking about their upcoming Star Wars game, Jedi Fallen Order, I think it's called, and they were saying it's going to amaze everybody. And normally, you know, I would say, well, it's just bluster, but it's also being made by Respawn. And you can imagine what a multiplayer game by Respawn with a Star Wars license is going to be like.
Probably pretty good.
Yeah. Anyway, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing this little game on the Switch called Mage Cat. It's a platformer side-scroller, and you're this little kitty with a mage hat, and you're it looks like you're shooting hairballs from the kitty. It meows and shoots hairballs at enemies, and you have a jump and a, like, momentary float, so you can float a few seconds as she, like, scrambles in the air, and you get also a kind of a jump forward ability using little potions, and it's a nice, cute little platformer game. It was like $5 and fun for a little price.
A scrolling shooter with cats in it.
Yeah, it's a little kitty. It's a little mage kitty. It's a little magic.
No, in my case, it was sort of like a Xevious Galaga type game with cats.
Yeah, this one is more along the lines of like Super Mario, but you're you're a little kitty shooting hairballs and jumping on enemies, and you have little boss battles. And
I'm shocked. Yeah. No one's ever done a kitty Super Mario game.
I guess they have now.
Yeah, I mean, but one that's even more, you know, one published by Nintendo. Just well, given the entire Nintendo treatment.
Bubsy left a bad taste in everyone's mouth.
I liked Bubsy. I liked him. Even if nobody else did, I liked him.
I didn't have anything about Toe Jam and Earl, and I don't know why.
So you don't know anything about Toe Jam and Earl?
No, I mean, for some reason, I'm thinking about Toe Jam and Earl, and I don't know why.
It was a Sega classic. Bubsy was the same, but Toe Jam and Earl is a... Yeah, and it's good. It's fun.
You know, that's why Bubsy was Super Nintendo.
Oh, yeah.
No, that was Microsoft, wasn't it?
Wait.
No, Blinks was Microsoft.
I feel like...
Blinks was Microsoft. Bubsy was... I don't know who Bubsy was. I think he was multi-platform.
Maybe, because I definitely played it on Sega.
I definitely played it on Nintendo.
Microsoft. Yeah, Blinks was Microsoft's attempt at a furry character as their mascot. And that went nowhere.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Both Blinks and Busby were good games. It's just that everybody had OD'd on furry mascots. They didn't want any more.
Questionable on that whole Bubsy's a good game thing.
I think it was because of Bonk. I think Bonk said, okay, we're done.
Bonk was something.
Does anybody remember the TurboGrafx 16?
Yes.
Yeah, I played Bubsy in Claw's Encounter of the Third Kind, which was on the SNES, and then later the Genesis, so it was multi-platform.
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay.
What was Gex? Gex was only PlayStation, wasn't it?
I think yes. So. I definitely played Gex, I remember that. Yeah, so there are a lot of, I guess, sly, smart aleck characters, platformer games. So maybe
Jazz Jackrabbit was Sonic for the PC. And that was done by, I think, people from 3D Realms or id. I know it's from one of the major, indie developers at the time. I think id did Jazz Jackrabbit.
I can't even remember Jazz Jackrabbit. There were there was so many of them coming out, though, at one given time. Furry characters with attitude, or batitude, as we
used to say. God, no, the 90s.
Yeah, batitude.
That's some really bad ones. I mean, I remember watching a video all about how desperately they were trying to give. They were all Poochie. All of them died on the way back to their home planet.
It's because Sonic came out of nowhere and kicked everybody's teeth in, and now we all have to have a Sonic.
Well, it wasn't just that, but Crash Bandicoot was also popular.
Yeah, but like Sonic was the original. Hey, you guys like that that clean cut Mario? Well, F that guy. This hedgehog's a badass.
With blast processing.
Blast processing. Sega does what Nintendo don't.
Here's the thing. It wasn't the games themselves, basically, that started it. It was the commercials for them.
Oh yeah.
They went overboard on that 90s extreme sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it just makes me burn every single early Image comic. Just burn them. Big bonfire.
There was a lot of that back in the day, you know, just
competition. Everything had to be dark.
I don't know. I just felt like I think it ended up hurting the brand more than just. I mean, if they just like focused on what they had as opposed to attacking the other team, I think that would have been better. But
no, here's the thing. No, the problem with Sega was they screwed up themselves. It had nothing to do with attacking the other brand or anything like that. I mean, they rushed out the Saturn, you know. And they fucked it up because they pissed off Walmart. And the one thing you do not want to do is piss off Walmart. And because they were going to sell it exclusively through one brick and mortar chain. And Walmart said, oh, yeah, well, we're not going to sell any Sega shit anymore. Right. So basically got frozen out of that. Then they rushed with the Dreamcast and they overpriced that. And they got killed by the PlayStation was it Kazurai or somebody coming out and saying $299. And that was it. It was the end of the Dreamcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought the Dreamcast for $50, you know, remember when they were remaindering all the Dreamcast stuff, and they still released Dreamcast software for a couple of years afterward. And it was because of the Dreamcast that I bought the Xbox. Because Sega went hand in hand with Microsoft and started releasing their 2K games on the Xbox.
Yeah, just like Sega Dreamcast did seem to have some good games. There was this Skies of Arcadia that I never got to play that was apparently on the Dreamcast.
I mean, one of the most popular racing games for the Xbox, Project Gotham Racing, was the Metropolis Street Racing. I forgot the name of the game. That was for the Dreamcast, you know. So, like I said, you know, the Dreamcast had some great stuff. It also had those little memory things you put in the controller. That was basically memory cards.
Mm-hmm.
They could barely take one game, but you know what? It was golden for my NBA 2K games, you know? Anyways, as for me, I'm replaying Mass Effect 2, and I just destroyed the Reaper, and now I'm doing all the side stuff that I prefer to do after the main story because they're more interesting when you have Legion with you.
Nice.
Yep. So... that means, of course, I decided this time to have a Shepherd romance Jack. It's not my favorite romance, but I love that romance in that you have this really damaged woman, you know, who's been fucked around and finally learns love again. So. Anyways, there's no gaming flashback this week, although there's tons of game we could have done. But we're going to start off with the news. Activision Blizzard lays off almost 800 employees, and this comes to us from Game Watcher. Activision Blizzard just announced in 2018 has been financially one of the best years for the company on record. The obvious response, of course, is for them to fire hundreds of employees due to their positions becoming redundant. Activision Blizzard firings came with citations of streamlining and restructuring the company and are likely spurred by the fact that a substantial number of previously active projects are no longer ongoing, for example, Destiny 2. Blizzard President J. Allen Brack said, quote unquote, "Currently, staffing levels on some teams were out of proportion with the current release slate. This means we need to scale down some areas of our organization." He also promised severance packages, continued health benefits, career coaching, and job placement assistance for those who lost their jobs. There's no way to make this transition easy for impacted employees. You know, this is a little bug of mine, but there's no such thing as impacted for anything except for Wisdom Team. Mm-hmm. You have an impact. You don't have impacted employees. What, they put them in boxes and just crush them? Anyways, but we are doing what we can to support our colleagues. On the Activision side of things, a more sobering announcement was made to investors. "While our financial results for 2018 was the best in our history, we didn't realize our full potential," said Activision CEO Bobby Kotick. Oh, God, he's still around. "These changes should enable us to achieve many opportunities in the industry and afford us blah, 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 blah." I'm going to tell you exactly what it means. Yeah, we made a lot of money, but guess what? The stock isn't going up. And the shareholders are unhappy. So we need to make more of a profit. That's all that says. That's what happens when you have shareholders. It doesn't matter if you have great profits. They have to be more profits so their stock goes up. You know, when you don't have shareholders, you can just be content with making a profit. But nope, when you have stockholders, they want to see their shares go up. Which means you're going to have to fire 800 people so that, you know, at least you'll have less people being paid. And they're probably closing development on certain games, so they don't need them anymore. So yeah, it's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, it has to be one of the most insulting things in the world to be in that position where you hear that conversation start with, "We had a record-setting year for profits," and then the following sentence is, "You're all fired."
Yeah, it's pretty horrible, and I think it's a sign of failure if they have to turn to firing employees just to show profit.
And well, not profit, more profits.
Right, and that's a serious issue in the games industry lately. Like, there have been, there was Telltale, which Telltale was because of
profits. Oh, no, but that had nothing to do, that had to do with the company being run into the ground by very stupid people.
But there was another one after that, there was a recent one, who was it? There was another mass layoff pretty recently, and that didn't have anything to do with profits either. And so it's like, this is just it's a glaring issue in the video game industry where once a company is done with you, cool. Well, here's your severance check. Go find another job.
It isn't just that. Here's the thing. It's more that they have shareholders who want their stock value to go up. And if you're just making a profit, that's not good. That's not enough. And that's what bugs me. You know, when you start opening your company up to shareholders, then you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
it's literally because it was literally a fact of like people saying like they had a record setting year, but somehow still fell short of expectations. So that means that the expectations
of their shareholders' expectations.
So that means that the expectations were likely unsustainable.
Well, here's the thing. Let's go back. Let's get out of the video game industry and go into the movie industry. Batman, Superman, Dawn of Justice earned $800-900 million, right? And it was significantly higher than even the production cost, even if you include, the art. But the problem is they promised their shareholders a certain amount, and it fell short of that certain amount. So even though that movie made a profit, it really didn't, because Warner Brothers promised, well, you're going to make $1.3 billion, and it only makes, let me put that in big, fat quotation marks, only makes $900 million. Including overseas, then it's considered a failure because they didn't match stockholder expectations. And that's what happened to Blizzard, Activision Blizzard. they didn't meet what they promised their shareholders. So, yeah, you made a profit, but guess what? You didn't make enough of a profit. You promised these people a certain amount so that their stocks could go up of a certain amount, you know? So whenever you hear a company, especially a video game or an entertainment company, opening, you know, going on the market, you know, for shareholders, then you can kiss your ass goodbye in terms of quality control, because now it's no longer about just turning a profit by making a good game. Now it's about, well, we promised the shareholders this, and we better make it by hook or by crook. And in this case, firing employees. Say 800 employees, say they make 50,000 each. Well, I mean, you know, you just save like $1.6 billion. A million. You know, you just, just what happens when you have to please people who don't give a shit about the quality of the product. They just want to see their money go up.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. That's what I had an issue with, that shareholder meeting at a Nintendo corporation where they were saying they didn't want to talk about Nintendo making games. They just want to talk about making profit. And it's like, you make profit by making games. So it's ridiculous not to talk about the games. And that's exactly why I don't want it to be so based on profit only, because I don't want every single game to be a shoot 'em up game. I was just watching a video the other day of Space Quest Historian talking about how back in the day when Doom came out and he had this first-person shooting game that got so popular that suddenly all the games had to be 3D and shooters, and it kind of just drowned out the other games that just didn't bring in that kind of profit, and it just made it seem like those games weren't worth making, and I hated that mentality.
What's funny is that had they known now what... They didn't know then what they had known now. They would have just said, oh, let's just stick with retro graphics. People are going to love it in the future. but, you know, they see, you know, and here's the thing. I don't think Epic has any stocks, right?
No, I don't think it's publicly traded.
I don't think they have any issued stocks. But, you know, here's the problem with having stockholders as well. You're afraid to innovate. Because you need something that's a proven success. You really cannot make, you really can't be daring, or else, you know, even if it breaks even, you've lost. Mm-hmm. You know?
And yeah, it's, it really does suck for those people. I hope that they can find jobs. Like, I did, to the industry's credit, I did see a lot of companies, like, stepping up and putting these are the careers we have available. Obsidian. Everybody, like, from lower tier to high tier, like, Obsidian.
They're not going to make as much, though. That's the problem, though.
Oh, I know. I know. That's the absolute bummer of it, but...
Here's the thing to all you developers out there, you prospective developers. This is the business. You're gonna be in one company out the other, and you're not gonna make much money unless you make your own game and happen to luck out. Mm-hmm. You know,
just make an Apex Legends. Just do it.
Or just be Lucas Pope and make a Papers, Please and Oprah Din, and you know, like I said, Lucas Pope, he doesn't have to care about stockholders. He just makes his games, and, you know, if they turn a profit, it's a big win. You know, he only has to worry about, you know, making a profit. He doesn't have to worry about, well, I have to make more money this time.
Mm-hmm. I have to make sure that the stocks increase in value, or else people will be mad that they just stayed the same.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
World War Z gets an April release date from Game Watcher. Developer Saber Interactive and publisher Focus Home Interactive announced today that co-op third-person shooter World War Z is set to release on April 16th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC. The PC version of World War Z will be an Epic Game Store exclusive. All World War Z pre-orders will include the bonus Lobo weapon pack. The pack is a special in-game loot drop that comes with three golden weapon skins for the ARK-103 assault rifle, Karas V-10 submachine gun, and 1911 protector, alongside the Lobo, a dual-bladed spade.
You know, had that been this DLC included Lobo from DC Comics, it would be an automatic win.
It's a little bit too much crossover. Inspired by the film of the same name, World War Z pits four players up against swarms of zombies while exploring new storylines featuring characters from around the globe. Players can choose between six distinct classes playable in the title's campaign mode, but also its team-based multiplayer players versus zombies mode. The title runs on Saber Interactive's own Swarm engine, which will see players facing hundreds of fast-moving, bloodthirsty zombies at a time.
So I saw a gameplay video from this, and if you saw the movie World War Z, in which you just had this mass of zombies, it was more like water, and then you're also crawling up on each other to create these human pyramids so they get them. That's exactly what happens in the game, which makes me very interested in this game. And, you know, there's no Left 4 Dead 3. Hopefully this will, you know, sate that thirst.
Or at least spur some interest for it to happen. Although, who knows with Valve.
Well, you know, I mean, like I said, if you saw the movie, and this is basically Left 4 Dead meets Dead Rising. That's how many zombies you see on screen. You see thousands of zombies at once. And there are some instances in which, you know, you see them afar, you have the rocket launcher, hey, guess what, I'm going to blow up 100 zombies at once.
Why the heck would you use a melee weapon in this game? Yeah, like I look at it and like zombies, there's a lot of them. There's a super ton of them, and yeah. Melee doesn't seem like a good idea.
And maybe it's like you better run. But here's the thing, you know, they do what they do in the movie and with that human pyramid, so you can't be on top of something and think you're safe because guess what, they're just gonna crawl over each other just to get at you.
Were you about to say something, Scott?
Yeah, it's always best to keep zombies at a distance and use guns and other long-distance weapons to eradicate them.
Sure. But, like, especially so in this because there's so many of them and they move fast. They move by 28 days later rules of mobility. So,
right.
Sticking around and hitting someone with a weapon. I don't know. It kind of worked in Left 4 Dead, but even Left 4 Dead didn't have this many zombies.
I'm intrigued also by players versus zombies. So it sounds like you're going to have two teams of humans, and the zombies are basically going to be an environmental hazard.
That's what it sounds like, yeah. And you're pitted against each other instead of working together against the zombies.
Well, the zombies want to kill everybody. I wonder if you actually get to play as zombies, though.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. And, you'd have to have some sort of... I don't even know how you'd do that, because I don't think there's going to... It doesn't seem like the kind of game where they're going to have specialty zombies.
Well, if they had distinct classes from the playable characters, I'm pretty sure they probably would... Although, you know, here's the thing. I don't think you need a boomer. I don't think you need a smoker. I don't think you need any of those special zombies in this game.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead. And I know Scott's very pleased at this news.
Yes. Dragon Quest Builders 2 comes to Switch, PS4 this summer. This is from Polygon. Dragon Quest Builders 2, the sequel to the Dragon Quest block-building action role-playing game, is coming to Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4 on July 12th, Square Enix announced today. The sequel to 2016's Dragon's Quest Builders will add online multiplayer for up to four players, as well as other new game features. Players can build larger structures and can travel across air, land, and sea, and can fast travel using a retro-style map. Builders 2 also adds the ability to raise and farm crops, irrigate the lands, creating rivers, waterfalls, and pools to swim in. And it does sound awesome. I'm totally going to be buying this on the Switch. I actually got the Nintendo Online thing, since like $19 a year. That's pretty good deal. So that'll definitely looking forward to that, and I'm also looking forward to the puzzle building feature that was shown earlier.
You played the first one on the PlayStation 4?
Yeah, I played it on the PlayStation 4. Had a lot of fun with that. And that one had a bit of traveling around, too. You used portals to travel to different areas of the map. You really weren't able to get a ship, so I don't know if that's what they're talking about. If you can get vehicles this time, that would be nice. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this game. I do remember them saying there's new abilities, being able to swim, because I think you couldn't before, so now you can. And I think you can climb or jump higher or something like that. I can't remember, the video was like a while ago. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this game.
Jay?
Yeah, Dragon Quest Builders has always been interesting to me. Like, I haven't played it. I've never made the time to play it, but I really, like... I like the premise of the first one a lot. Like, the idea of what happens if you join up with the evil guy and ruin the world and then have to put it back together.
And you know, he gives you that offer again when you play it, and he says, "Hey, you want to join me?" And I didn't do it this time because I wanted to beat him. But it really does make it more enjoyable and more fulfilling when you know that that option is actually valid, that it's there. You could take this option if you want, or you
wait
can...
a minute, wait, wasn't this the entire plot to Tyranny?
Yeah, but Dragon Quest did it first.
Did it?
Mm-hmm. Dragon Quest
out a year before.
This was literally the original Dragon Quest that we're talking about, where you had the option to join with the bad guy, and then the entire premise of Dragon Quest, like, you say no, you fight him, you win, happy ending. If you say yes, you join him, the screen just turns red and the game freezes. The entire premise of Dragon Quest Builders was, what if you said yes and joined the Dragon Emperor?
Mm-hmm. And you get to see what happens to the world. If the world gets destroyed and your former hero is off... he has a castle and he's ruling half the world, or a portion of it.
And I'm reminded of Drakengard and Nier.
Mm-hmm. And you have to fight him. You have to defeat that hero, and then you go on to fight the Dragon Lord.
More like Air Dick.
Yeah.
Sorry, the original hero's name is Erdrick. In any case, but yeah, I'm all for more Dragon Quest Builders. I know a lot of people love this game. It really is like a good mix of JRPG and Minecraft sensibilities. And so, them adding just more functionality to the game, making it multiplayer, it sounds like they're taking the right steps to like lean even deeper into that Minecraft sensibility while also creating more.
I don't think the first one didn't really have multiplayer. You could view other people's builds, but it was like random. You couldn't like go into a person's world and build something together like you can in Minecraft. But even so, I think Dragon Quest Builders is what Minecraft Story Mode should have been, where you had this world and a story, and you built stuff that actually affected that world, like you do in Dragon Quest Builders. And I assume this one's going to be even more so now, if you can have your...
Yeah, here's the thing. The Telltale's Lego game was basically for younger audience. I mean, literally. I mean, it was very basic, you know. I mean, then they found out, wait a minute, we have older fans here, and they decided to, we got to up our game a little bit, which is why you noticed, Scott, that the game got more and more sophisticated as each episode came out of later ones.
Mm.
You know, so it's sort of like they said, oh, we got to up our game on this. It's a pity that we won't see another one, Telltale Lego game, because there was one in the works until, you know.
Right.
Until, they might actually come back to it again. I mean, Lego does have a lot of money.
Yeah, but I'm just really happy to see that they did take the right lessons. They're moving in a direction that adds more of what people like about Minecraft to the game, while also doing more Dragon Quest stuff, which is great.
By the way, I think the Movie 2 game is getting good reviews.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it.
Building and stuff.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the Lego Movie too. I really liked the first one, so I need to get out there and see the second one.
I mean the game, not the movie. The game.
Wait, what?
The movie's getting positive reviews, but I'm talking about the game itself, the tie-in game.
Oh, I didn't know that there was a tie-in game for the Lego Movie.
Yeah, and it's basically something like Dragon Quest Builders, in which you know, unlike the other Traveler's Tales games, you know, in this one they actually have an open world, and you have to build bigger stuff, you know, and you know, so it's more open world and it's more building, and so it basically they're. Like I said, this game is not by Traveler's Tales, but it's very unlike the other Lego games, which are very structured. But yeah, for those who don't know, it looks like Minecraft was invaded by a JRPG.
Nice.
Because the world itself is Minecraft, but the characters are, you know, fully fleshed JRPG character.
Yeah, you have a good story. I'm hoping that the story quality is just as good as it was in the first one.
Because it really doesn't seem like the kind of game where you would have much of a story. It seems like there would probably be some sort of stand-in in there, but you don't expect much out of it. But it ends up actually being worthwhile.
Yeah, there was a good story, and what I really love about fantasy stories in general is when they put philosophy in, and they really discuss the freedom of choice with Dragon's Quest Builders, and you had a part where the goddess character is talking, or, you know, goddess is talking to your character, wondering why the first hero had, you know, defied and gone with the Dragon Lord, and how you are defying her and going to fight the Dragon Lord because she told you you're not a hero, you don't have the strength to do this. And it was all came down to freedom of choice and being able to do what you wanted to do and not feel like this is what you have to do, you're born to do this. And so choice is really important in this game, it seems like.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Chucklefish Boss says Sony is responsible for lack of PS4 crossplay, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. The CEO of Chucklefish has responded to Sony's claims that the PlayStation 4 crossplay is available to any devs and publishers that request it. In an interview earlier this week, Sony chairman Sean Layden told Game Informer that, quote, "We're open for business on this one. All it takes is for publishers and developers who wish to permission it. As ever, just work with your PlayStation account manager and they will walk you through the steps that we've learned through our partnership with Epic on how this works." Albert Tai, Chucklefish's CEO, responds to the claim on Reset Era. He says, "We made many requests for crossplay, both through our account manager and directly with higher-ups, all the way up until release month. And we were told in no uncertain terms that it was not going to happen." Chucklefish's own game, Wargroove, has crossplay between PC, Xbox One, Switch, and we're keen to include PlayStation 4 players, but Ty reports, "We were told no."
Yeah, that sounds about status quo for PlayStation 4, or Sony rather. It's funny too because I just saw something from Sony today talking about they appreciated some of the other platforms' unity on certain matters. And I was like, then why don't you guys get more involved in maybe they were talking about
you. You know, here's the thing. They think they're on top of the leaderboard, and they are for now, you know, with PlayStation 4. But here's the thing. If you pay too much attention to your bottom line, you're not going to notice your support eroding. You know, they had to have their arm twisted to have, Fortnite multiplayer, and also what was the other one? I can't believe it. You know, the car soccer game.
Oh, Rocket League.
Yeah, Rocket League. They had to have their arm twisted to have that be cross-play. But the thing is that, you know, they better not. You know, they're in danger of making themselves look like dinosaurs. And that perception, you know. When the Xbox One, whatever next is going to be in the PlayStation 5, come around in 2020, it's going to be interesting to see what the sales are like.
Interesting. I support Sony. I love my PlayStation. I'm probably not going to switch over to anything else anytime soon. I'm going to have my Switch and I'm going to play games on it. But generally speaking, if there's something that I want to get, it's often going to be on PlayStation. But yeah, it still isn't like a very good, it's not a good look. Like, when everybody else in the world is playing games with each other, and the walls are breaking down between, the console wars are over, they ended, nobody cares anymore.
Well, what we talked about last week was that Microsoft was going to be putting a Xbox Live app on the Switch, which is a boon to a lot of people who want to be able to use Xbox Live for just basically chat purposes and messaging. I mean, just those two things alone, people want it for the Switch.
We're moving towards the Star Trek universe where all the wars have ended, currency is gone, and let's just explore.
Yeah, I like that. First star on the left.
I mean, that is idealistic, but at the same time, it is kind of happening. Like, Microsoft is kind of broken down the wall. Microsoft is kind of leading the charge on breaking down the walls quite a bit, and that's cool. I'm certain that at the end of the day, there is something in profits for them that matters there too, but at the same time, they're doing it. They're taking a shot at it because, I mean, Sony sure ain't. So they're capitalizing on a lot of stuff that Sony isn't doing. And that's kind of how Sony, that's
not, but at Microsoft, it's like, you know, Microsoft said, oh shit.
Right.
We've been listening to Don Matrick too long. Get rid of him so we can start doing things that people want.
Right. They like, Sony and Microsoft are on the verge of like doing a flip, where there was a point where Microsoft was kind of like doing questionable.
Well, Microsoft, here's the thing: way back when, if you remember, Final Fantasy XIV, it was not on the Xbox because Microsoft did not want to do crossplay with Sony, and you know, which was a basic reversal of their attitudes, and Sony was complaining. So Microsoft never had a Final Fantasy XIV on the Xbox.
Yeah. It's, and so we're at this point now where Sony and Microsoft are kind of doing a flip, where Sony got ahead because they were listening to fans and they were getting the games that people wanted to see and they were making good decisions when it came to those games. Now they're kind of turtling up and saying, we're top dog, we're going to stay here, go F yourself. You answer to us, not us. You call us, not, or no, we'll call you, don't call us. And Microsoft is sort of playing around that, breaking down these walls, doing all sorts of crossplay, and also, I mean, like, they've always been leading the charge on backwards compatibility, where Sony is like, who wants to play that? Turns out a lot of people.
The other thing is that, we're getting into Microsoft's wheelhouse, because what they've always been good at, even before consoles, is networking. And basically, crossplay and all that other stuff. That's Microsoft's deal. They're the ones who forced Sony into doing PSN, you know. And Nintendo still hasn't done online well. And maybe Nintendo's attitude is, you know what? Let's concentrate on making games. Microsoft, you do whatever you want with networking. Okay, just, we don't want to deal with that. We just wanted to make our games. You worry about online for us.
I guess that's one way to do it, is just let the experts handle it.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because surely if Sony continues to be so stubborn, they can't keep that momentum up. Surely, like, I can imagine that maybe not immediately, but probably more likely around the time that we start switching console generations, we're going to see what happens.
2020 and Cyberpunk 2077. Can't wait. even Cyberpunk 2077 is only half the game they promised. It'll be awesome.
How long do you think Nintendo's current console Switch will go? Because I don't foresee another, like, Wii U happening, you know, like, where they make a...
I mean, here's the thing. They'll probably release the Switch 2 or whatever it is, like a year or two after the next generation, because they also came into this generation a little late too, right?
Yeah.
And they're not relying on being cutting edge. Nintendo's doing Nintendo. They're doing their fun to play, you know,
I just wonder if we'll get another 3D Zelda.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The 3DS has been starting to tank now. It's getting to that point in its lifespan. I don't think they're going to release another mobile console.
They're in fact releasing a remake of Zelda's Link's Awakening, and that.
I know TJ is very excited about that.
I'm excited too. I mean, it looks like a great game, and I'm looking forward to seeing that on the Switch. And I think that kind of means that the 3DS is kind of done.
Yeah, but you know, the 3DS has had a long, long. What's it called? I mean.
That's true.
Like the Atari 2600 of this age, you know, and I might get a 3DS, you know, just when it's out of, you know, when it's on its way out, because I'll get it for cheap, just like I did with the Dreamcast. And you know, the 3DS has an amazing library. So
yeah, but I mean, they haven't really released the 3DS isn't getting like really quality titles anymore. It's kind of in its shovelware stage. Well,
I don't mean that titles are being released now, but the titles I never played on the 3DS that are the quality titles, they'll be new to me.
Yeah. They should start taking some of the stuff that's coming out like near the end of the 3DS life cycle and moving it over to the Switch as well, like they're doing with the Wii U stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, though. The Switch is the successor to the 3DS. You know, it's a console you play on your TV, but I think Nintendo always intended it to be their next handheld, right? Just so that, you know, so when the Switch 2 comes out, it'll be their new 3DS.
Yeah.
Now, you'll know that it's really the sequel to the 3DS if the Switch 2 comes with Street Pass.
Yeah, like right now the biggest issue that I have with traveling with the Switch is I still don't have a very good cover for it, and so I always worry about scratching the screen.
You know, here in New York, all the new buses have outlets at the back of every seat. And that sort of tells me, you know, people who own a Switch, I mean, forget people with laptops and stuff like that, but people who own a Switch are probably ecstatic because, you know, they can just plug in their Switch while riding on, you know, like a 30-minute bus ride, you know, and not lose any of their juice. So we're getting to a point in which, you know, in a lot of cities, in a lot of major cities, you're going to see plenty of ways to charge your stuff. And also Wi-Fi hotspots. And New York has the Link NYC Wi-Fi hotspots.
That's Google. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you're in Austin, right, TJ?
I'm just south of it.
Right. So when you go to Austin, how many tech, you know, stuff, public tech stuff do you have there?
Plenty. Like, it's all over the place.
See, that's the future. I mean, it's in the big cities, but, you know, like in 30 years, you know, small towns are going to be doing it too.
I mean, even around here where I live, New Braunfels, it's around enough because this is such a tourist city. They need that stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, one item that's not there, which I want to briefly talk about, is that the EA had their little announcement, and they said they didn't quite make as much as they thought they would, and that's because Battlefield 5 totally, completely tanked. And we discussed this last week. You know, I don't know what's wrong with Battlefield 5. I mean, I don't think the name is that tainted because a lot of people are playing Star Wars Battlefront 2, you know. I just think, I don't know. I mean, Call of Duty has the name. I just think Battlefield has always seemed like a reaction to Call of Duty rather than being its own thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned this about Battlefield before. It has a very arcadey feel that almost feels like on the cheap side at points. I told somebody this after having thought about it for a little bit, is that Battlefield has almost always felt like a free-to-play game that's not free. And it's not like saying that it's a bad game. It's just saying that there's always been some little bit of...
A sheen of cheapness.
That's a good way of putting it. That it just... It doesn't come off seeming like a polished AAA title.
Well, here's the thing. You know, DICE is no longer working on Battlefield. I think it's just some other division that's working on Battlefield because they're working on Battlefront, you know. Because Star Wars Battlefront is, you know, EA's big shooter, you know, their big licensed shooter. Now, speaking of Battlefield games, the other thing that was mentioned in the report is that they're coming out with their new Plants vs. Zombie game. And it's being developed by the people who did Garden Warfare, which means, hey, guess what? We're getting Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 3 later this year. And I'm going to tell you something. That is the game that is Battlefield done perfectly well. It is what Battlefield wants to be, you know. And despite the cutesy characters, I mean, it is really polished multiplayer. And I don't mind being ganked in that game because, A, it's so cute that how can you be mad? And, B, it's made so that, you know, anybody can play.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, you've sung the praises of that game a lot. And, like, it's something that I've always been curious about. And I still hear people say regularly that it was cool. But,
cool. I mean, I don't play it as much, but it's still getting... You know, and here's the thing. It does have microtransaction and loot boxes, but here's the thing. Like Halo 5, you don't need to pay for it. In Halo 5, like if I play three big team battle games, I'll have enough to get a gold rec. Same thing with Plants vs. Zombies, Garden Warfare. If I play a few rounds, I'm going to have enough to buy the good booster packs. I don't need to pay for it. I mean, it's sort of the perfect and sort of like, well, if you don't have much time or you're just really impatient, yeah, you could buy it from us, but play for 2 hours and you're going to have plenty of money, in-game money to buy a booster pack and a good one too.
Yeah, and like similar with Rainbow Six Siege, where like you it's a little slow starting out, but once you start to build up the currency flow, you'd never have to pay for operators. You could just earn your way to them pretty easily.
I think most people buy the season pass anyway. I mean,
yeah,
they trust, you know, the developer so much with that game. They said, yeah, we'll just buy the season pack. I know we're not going to be disappointed with the operators.
Right, but like for somebody like me that was there from the get go and. Like has been playing a while, building up the currency to get another operator is pretty easy. Same thing with League of Legends as well. Like I had to go in on some champs at the start, but this far in, it's at a point where like if I'm paying money for something, it's likely on cosmetic skins.
Yeah. Scott?
Yes, I'm here.
I'm just wondering if you have any opinion.
No, nothing to add on this, sorry.
Okay, so look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net. Along with the industry news and our gaming history articles, we enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. All set us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. Last week's question of the week was, what game do you really want to see remade the most? And I said Deus Ex.
And I said the SSI Gold Box games, like
SSI Gold Box AD&D games, yeah. Although I would say, you know, I would really like to see Unlimited Adventures be made.
That would be cool, too.
Yeah. And what did you say, TJ?
What was the question?
What game do you want to see remade the most?
Oh, man. Okay, yeah. I have a big, long answer for this. Xenogears. Hmm. Xenogears.
I was about to say anything that's Metal Slug.
That is a good choice.
Xenogears. It's the weirdest thing. Like it's the weirdest, longest story behind it because the game. It was a game that came. It was an RPG by Squaresoft that came out shortly before Final Fantasy VII, and obviously, like They poured a lot of resources into it, made a really excellent first disc, and then they diverted all their resources to Final Fantasy VII by the time they got to the second disc. And so it's kind of an unfinished game where they had all these ideas, they had a lot of different plot points planned out, and they had to nix a lot of them in order to complete the game. And it's kind of, and it's sort of like, you really feel it. The second disc, like, instead of being able to travel the world and explore places, it's sort of a linear path where, like, the stories play out and you just fight battles. And I would love to see Xenogears remade the way it was supposed to be. Like, with, like, there's actually a book of all the ideas that were supposed to go in. Like, it's a compendium of all the stuff that was supposed to go into Xenogears. And I would love to see them take that book and just fully realize the ideas that they had.
Anyway, that's our picks for the remake we most want to see. Let us know what remakes you'd like to see the most. Anyways, you can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And you can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.